Periscopers. Peace. No, I'm fine.
You've got enough water there.
Got water, plenty of water.
Excellent.
Plenty of water.
Hello. Hi. A real mixture of people, please.
Fuck all bollocks. This is... I'm only talking to you so it looks like I've got friends. But I'm just talking to my phone. Hey, man. None of this matters. 2.5 hour drive. No, they don't. Because I'm fucking awesome, that's why. Yeah, a little bit.
Just sneak out. You can't sneak from the girls. I'm going to leave the train to get to make your way out of the fire doors and into the evacuation point outside in the car park. So without further ado...
With that threat of terror hanging over us that we might potentially die during
this... I'm pretty sure we'll be fine.
All right.
Anyway,
thank you very much. There we go. Look, if you're wondering why I've got my phone set up here, I'm streaming this on Periscope as well. So there are loads of, there are about eight people watching this, including a man in America. I don't know why a man in America is watching somebody he's never heard of giving a lecture in Bridgewater. I don't know, but you're welcome. You're welcome. I'll tell you a little bit about myself and then we'll kind of get into this. My name is Ian Lee. I started off doing TV about 16, 17 years ago. I did a few kind of fairly big-ish TV shows. I did a thing called The 11 O'Clock Show that had Ricky Gervais and Mackenzie Crook and Sacha Baron Cohen and Don Jolly and Jimmy Carr and all these kinds of people on it. I did a few other bits and pieces, and the TV work kind of dried up about 11 or 12 years ago when I hosted a spectacular flop on Channel 4 that was the replacement to The Big Breakfast called Rise, and no one watched it, and that kind of killed my TV career. I've done bits and pieces since then. The most recent thing I've done that some of you may have seen, I did one of the Big Brother spin-off shows with Rylan a couple of years ago. You know, it was quite low rent, but it pays the bills. Rylan is a delightful gentleman. Since the TV work kind of dried up, and sort of a little bit before that, but I've been feeding my children by working on the radio. And I have worked on loads of different radio stations, XFM, Six Music, Radio 4, LBC, Virgin, Absolute, and I'm now on a brand new station called Talk Radio. It's kind of just launched in the last 3 months, and I host a late night show. And so the talk I'm going to do today is primarily about working in the radio and about not even how much I got into it, but why I love it so much. And I passionately love radio. I think it is the greatest kind of medium that we have to get information, to hear stories. And also how I like to do it, how I like to present, how I like to work with the producer. And I'm going to play some clips from that. And I'll talk about 35, 40 minutes. And after that, if you've got any questions about anything, you can ask me anything, you know, even if it's about Ryland's teeth, I don't mind. £25,000 those teeth cost him. Isn't that enough? But, you know, he's got a very good bite now, so that's good. So I'm going to play, I've cleverly called this talk Doing the Radio. I'm not very good at titles, so that kind of just sums it up, really, is Doing the Radio. The way I like to do it, and by the way, this is not necessarily the best advice on how to do the radio, because all of those places I mentioned, I got the sack from eventually. I tend to get the sack quite a bit. So I don't know if that's a good thing or not. I did a talk last week, and I was introduced as a maverick. A maverick. He's a maverick. And what a maverick means is you don't stay at a place for more than 2 years because you get booted out because you upset someone. But, you know, I've been able to feed the kids and pay the mortgage and stuff. So the way I like to do the radio, the reason I love radio so much is because I think you can build a community with it. You can get a nice community, and that can involve the people that you're working with on air, but more importantly, the listener. When I'm a listener to a radio, and I love listening to the radio, I don't really watch much TV anymore. I kind of listen to the radio a lot more. It is normally a solitary experience. It's normally me in my car, or me in bed, or me when I'm brushing my teeth in the morning. It's normally me and the radio. And it's a really intimate kind of experience. How many of you listen to the radio? All right, most of you. I'm going to pick people at random, I'm not picking you. What do you listen to on the radio?
Me.
Oh, well, you're next now. What do you listen to? Okay. What do you listen to?
Radio 4.
What do you listen to on Radio 4?
Word of mouth and stuff while I'm driving home.
Why? Why do you like that so much?
I like word of mouth because it's dealing with linguistics, which is my area.
Yeah.
I like listening to Radio 4 on the way to work and on the way back home because it keeps me up to date with politics.
Yeah.
And because it deals with more, it's not puerile.
Okay, puerile. Well, Radio 4 is quite puerile sometimes.
It can be
quite puerile. Radio 4 is brilliant, right? And I'm aware that it's a very kind of white, middle-aged, middle-class kind of radio station. And when I
mention this to other people, lots of people say, well, it doesn't represent me as a young black woman, or me, you know, but me as a, it's quite a specific audience that they're going for, but it's a brilliant place to listen to. You know, Radio 1 and Heart, they're good. Heart I consider to be kind of wallpaper radio, in as much as wherever you go around the country, it's exactly the same. You know, there's very little personality, I think, and there's tiny bits of it. Speech radio is what I tend to do. There's been a little bit of music radio, but it's primarily speech radio. And for me, the joy of speech radio is, and phone-in radio in particular, is you can have a guest in and you kind of know what the guest is going to say, and you can have a journalist in who's talking about a story, and generally those pieces are scripted, so you know exactly what they're going to say. When you start involving callers, when you start inviting, you know, you lot, random people to call in, then the show is completely... it's not so dangerous is the wrong word, but the possibilities are endless, because suddenly there is a random element coming into the show that I have very, very little control of. I can cut people off, but once they're on the air talking, it kind of becomes a bit random. The first clip I'm going to play is all of these clips are from a station I used to work at, a local BBC station, BBC Three Counties. They sacked me as well, but it's a theme throughout the whole thing. But the clip I'm going to play is from when the film 50 Shades of Grey came out. I don't know if anyone saw it, right? It's the most boring, most unerotic film. It's just tedium, you know. But everyone was talking about it. It was a huge kind of popular cultural event. And so we were talking about it, and I had the bright idea of inviting the listeners to come with us, to me and my production team, to come and see the film. But I didn't just want to invite anybody down. I decided to invite a load of old men, and I don't know why, but the clip you're going to hear, there's two main voices in this. You're going to hear an old guy called Dennis, who's 90 years old, and there's another guy called Matt. Now, Matt is really interesting, right? He's in his 80s. Matt is really interesting because he used to hate me when I took over the show, and he would say, "Hitch, surely, and I hope you get the sack. Hitch, sure." And you'll kind of hear him being a little bit grumpy in this. So this is me inviting Matt and Dennis along to see 50 Shades of Grey.
Matt, would you like to come with Justin and Dane Luton to see 50 Shades of Grey? It's on my dollar, brother. Are you going to come? Sorry?
No, thank you.
Well, why not?
I want to hear Kenny Rogers.
No, for goodness sakes. I'm going to pay for a ticket, Matt, and I'll even buy you a hot dog.
No, if you pay for it, there's something dodgy going on.
There's nothing dodgy. We're having a lad's night out.
Yeah.
Group of old men and two youngsters to see 50 Shades of Grey.
I wouldn't see youngsters, mate. I could have seen you dance you.
Stay there, Dennis.
Yes.
Do you fancy coming to see 50 Shades of Grey?
Why not?
Then it's me, Dave, Justin and Matt.
If you let it short night though.
I couldn't take it, mate.
You don't have to take it, Matt.
No.
Oh, for goodness sakes. So, Catherine, put your hand down. You're not coming, it's your last night.
Yes, Catherine's coming.
So, Justin's coming. So, Dennis, you're going to come?
Yes, I'll be there.
Matt, you coming?
No, thank you.
Matt, will you come with us?
What a load of old rubbish.
And in many ways, Matt is right. What a load of old rubbish. But the reason we did that was, and I made it sound, I used a kind of lads thing there, and my show is so not laddish at all. That kind of misinterprets what we do, really. It's not laddish at all. We were kind of being a bit faux laddish. And we did it, and we went. Matt didn't come, Dennis came, and we went and saw 50 Shades of Grey, and we took some microphones and we recorded us watching bits of it. The funniest bit was when, I don't know if anyone's seen it, but there is a scene where Mr. Grey opens the door to the, you know, kind of the sex dungeon, and Dennis very loudly, 90-year-old, went, "That looks just like my garage." The woman in front told us to turn around and told us to shut up. The reason I'm playing that is because a lot of people think that speech radio and Radio 4 and local radio can be really dull. It doesn't have to be. It can be very funny. It can be frivolous. Frivolous is all right. Frivolous is okay. You need light and shade, but frivolous is okay. It's also a way of showing how to generate content. There was a rubbish film out. We got a week's worth of shows before the film, trying to persuade Matt to come. He didn't come. And then we had a couple of shows afterwards talking about the film and talking about our experiences and playing the stuff that we recorded. And it's all because when I do a radio show, I try and build a community within the listeners, right? And we'll hear more from Matt a bit later on, but as I say, Matt, when I first started, he hated me. He'd phone up, I hate you, Sean. Hope you get the sack, I hate you, Sean. And there at the end, oh, it's a lot of rubbish. But he's playing along with us. That's about 2 years into me being there. I'd won him around enough that he was still listening, and he was kind. He would let me play games with him like that. His tongue was a little bit in his cheek there, but he played. And for me, being nice and being friendly and being open on the radio and sharing stuff on the radio will invite more listeners. It will encourage more people to listen in. If I'm being honest, and not nice all the time, because that makes it sound a bit fake, you know. Okay, in fact, this bit kind of sums up the not being nice, okay? This bit shows up the bit about not being nice and how radio can be really powerful in terms of what it can achieve or what it can find out. At this local radio station, there was a hospital, Bedford Hospital, that was having great problems with the paediatric unit. So the kids' unit was in really bad trouble. And we found out through a source that they had been bullying, that some of the consultants had been bullying the junior doctors, that two kids had nearly died because the hospital completely muffed up, and that they were going to close this paediatric unit. Okay. And again, this shows how you can build trust with listeners and how you can kind of get stuff on radio that you can't get in TV, and you probably won't, you won't get to the same extent in newspapers and print. This all started because we had a dad phone up who said, I've heard rumours that the paediatric department is going to close down, and I'm really worried because I've got an 8-year-old kiddie and he needs to go to this hospital every week, and if he doesn't go to, they close this, the nearest one that he can go to is 100 miles away, and it's, you know. And I mentioned about sharing bits of my life. I've got two little boys, 6 and 4, silly names, but I've got two little boys, and my youngest had been in hospital for a few months. He had something wrong with his kidney and he'd been in hospital, and I was able to kind of share with this dad the pain that he was going through, and so I can understand, you know, and we kind of identified, and I felt very passionate about this hospital. So we kept inviting the hospital to come on the show and talk to us, and they would not come on. They refused to come on. They would send out statements. They would send out statements after the show, so we had to read it the next day, saying, we are addressing the problems, we'll be making a they sent out a statement saying, we'll be making a statement later on, which was nuts, and they weren't going to talk to us. So Catherine, my producer, you heard briefly then.
Communications will be coming to people, our own staff and patients. We're going to make changes. This is entirely to do with it.
I'm not denying you're going to close it.
Well, I'm saying we can't run the service the way we're running it now with seven fewer doctors, with a number of doctors leaving. We have to make some changes from the end of July.
MP Richard Fuller says that unit must stay open.
It must stay open. I am not responsible for the long-term future of services. Commissioners, commission services. My job is to provide safe services.
I'm going to ask you one more time. The implication I picked up from this, and I'm sure that many of the listeners will pick up, you're going to close that paediatric unit at the end of July, is that correct?
We're going to make sure there'll be fewer services on this side from the end of July.
They closed it, of course. And you can tell that, and it was just the most awkward thing. He did this horrible thing that politicians and MPs and councillors do when they've had a media training set, they had an hour of media training. They don't answer the question. It's a simple yes or no question. Are you going to do this? Well, what we're going to do is, no, are you going to do yes or no? He wouldn't answer the question. And doing that interview was horrendous. I hated it because he stood here, right? And he's got his team of people there. And I'm stood there with a microphone and we're in a car park and it's weird and it's really intimidating with all these people. But we had all this secret information that he didn't know that we had. And we were, you know, we were in the right. Morally and ethically, we were in the right. We had the sympathy of all the parents that listened to the show on our side. For that, I don't know if any of you are going to be considered, you know, presenting or being an interviewer or whatever, even a producer, you'll interview people. The two tricks. One trick there that I did, that I learned at the BBC, it's a brilliant one, is you're allowed to describe what the person is doing, right? And he shrugged his shoulders, right? So on the radio, it's nothing. But by saying, wait a minute, you just shrugged your shoulders, what does that mean? If you describe the visual, I've done interviews with counsellors as well, a horrible counsellor, and he kind of turned to his friend and pulled a face when he asked a question, like that. And I said, right, I'm going to stop you there. Why have you just turned to your friend and pulled a face? And it totally caught him off guard. And it's a legitimate tool. You're allowed to do that. It's not unfair. Another...
The paediatric unit is going to change.
I don't know how to work this controller. It's down to go forward. It's down to go forward. Another thing you can do is leave gaps. Right? If you're doing an interview, the best weapon I've got in my arsenal is to leave a gap. Right, so you ask a question, and the person will answer that question. You say nothing. They will think they've got to fill that gap. And it's really horrible, it's so uncomfortable, and it's really awkward, but it works. It works almost every time. You will ask someone, so what did you think about what did you think about the decision at the meeting last night? Well, I think it was a fair decision. But I mean, and then they'll fill in the gap, they'll start answering the question, and it's brilliant. You get so much information out of them. This next caller, this was a caller to the show, and I left lots of gaps. I don't know if you hear the gaps here, but this is another reason why I love speech radio so much, right? Because you don't know who's listening. The phone-in radio, you don't know who's listening, you don't know who's going to call in. We were doing a phone-in about a convicted... A taxi driver had been found. He'd had a conviction for rape before he got his taxi licence, but he was still allowed to drive. So we were asking the question, should you be allowed to work specifically with children if you've got a conviction for sexual crime? This guy phoned up, right? John, it's not his real name. And Catherine, my producer, took the call, and she is very skillful, as you will get over time, over experience, of knowing when a caller is gold, right? It's got something amazing to say, even if they don't say it. And she buzzed me in my ear, and she said, don't go to the news now, I want to put this caller on straight away, because if we don't put this call on, he's going to go, right? So I went, okay, right, we're not going to do the news. We've got John on the line. John, what do you want to say? And he basically was saying, yeah, you should be allowed to work if you've got a conviction for a sexual crime. And you should be allowed to work with children if you've got a conviction for a sexual crime. Because he's got a conviction for a sexual crime. And he should be allowed to work with children. And it turned out he'd served 12 years. He'd served 12 years, right? You don't serve 12 years in prison unless you've done something really, really bad, right? And he wouldn't say what it was. He wouldn't say what it was. And I kind of just let these silences grow, and then I asked him.
What do you think about what happened?
I think I was in the wrong area, wrong situation, wrong time, I was in the wrong place.
Did you commit a sexual offence against a child?
No.
But? Yeah, the CPS and the legal system found enough evidence,
yes,
to send you to prison for 12 years. And you've admitted yourself this morning that you've had to undergo a lot of rehabilitation to kind of tame those impulses.
Yes. Basically, when you're in prison and you go and you get into a rehabilitation, but it's through the prison service, you haven't done these certain courses or staff and done the rehabilitation courses in the prison service, that goes against you.
It goes against you. But wouldn't it be fair to say, John, that you've learned to say the right things to kind of get your freedom, that you've not actually changed it anyway?
Yes.
Yeah.
Basically, he served 12 years for a conviction against... he didn't go into details, thankfully, but it was obviously it was against children. He had to go on a rehabilitation course so that he was not sexually aroused by children. And he part of his release was he's not allowed to go anywhere near a school, he's not allowed to go in sweet shops and things like that on his own. Right? This all came from a call from a guy that just wanted to say, I think you should be allowed to work with kids if you've got a conviction for a sex crime. That's all he wanted to say, and he didn't want to say any more, and I just kept teasing it out of him, and in a different part to the call, he admits that he did do something with a child, but he thinks it was an unfair, as a lot of paedophiles do, it was an unfair thing, and he shouldn't have gone to prison. And this is another thing I learned at the BBC before, 4 or 5 years ago at LBC. I would have got really angry, and I would have, you know, as a even before I was a dad, I would get angry because you're talking to a paedophile. And a lot of people after this, some people after this, had a go at me for not getting angry enough with this guy. And it's very calm all the way through it. But I think there's no point in getting angry. I made it clear that I disagreed with and was, you know, found what he did abhorrent. I made it clear that I thought his punishment was at the very least justified, if not, you know, it could have been stronger. And You don't need to go in all guns a-blazing all the time like I did with the hospital guy. You sometimes, if you just do it nice and calmly, and just nice and relaxed, and you know, make it known that you disagree with what they've done and what they're saying, but you don't need to go and fight it. And that's a lesson I've learned over the last few years, and it's really, really helped me. It's not all miserable. Is it all miserable? No, it's not all miserable. Having fun on the radio is kind of primarily what I do, and I'm now sort of mixing between having a laugh and doing the slightly more serious stuff. And it's a nice kind of balance to get it going. I like to surround myself with people that I work with, that I understand and that I know and that I can get on with. This next clip I'm going to play is, you're going to hear me, you're going to hear my producer Catherine, young girl called Kelly. You're also going to hear a guy called Justin. Now, Justin was our roving reporter, right? He's brilliant. He's a machine. You can say, Justin, can you get us a package on what people think of bears? And he'll say, yeah, no problem. 20 minutes later, he'll come back in with a two-minute vox pop that he's gone out on the street and he's interviewed people, he's sat at the computer, he's edited it down, he's topped and tailed it, and we're playing it out. He's brilliant. He's also a massive idiot, right? I've said that to his face. I will say that to his face again. He's a massive idiot. This shows to me why, and I don't like kind of posses on radio and everyone applauding is something, oh, that was brilliant, well done. It's just like having a conversation for me. I like to do radio as though I'm having a conversation. And this is a conversation we're having. It just happens to be on air. And it invites the listeners in. We're talking about magic. Right? I'm a big fan of magic. Like card tricks and stuff like that. And Justin gets a little bit angry. This is not him putting on a character, because I wouldn't have tolerated him putting on a character. This is him genuinely saying what he thinks.
I've always thought, though, you know how they create money? Sometimes they have a card in their hand and suddenly that turns into a £20 note. Yeah. If it was that real, surely they'd be multi-millionaires. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do, mate, but
it's not real, it's a trick. But if you can make money out of a card, well, Quentin.
Yeah, but it's a trick.
Yeah, but if you can turn a card into a £20 note, I'm being serious, if you can do that, where's the £20 note come from then? It's a trick! Well, if it's a trick, why not trick every few seconds and make all that money?
Just saying. It's a trick, Mum.
That's Catherine.
He's already got the money.
Wait.
It's his own 20 quid.
Mm-hmm. So you say.
So is the law of science. How do you get that out?
Are you telling me you've not had the same thought?
No. Not since I was about five.
It's a trick. It's a trick.
I love that bit so much because it's so unplanned and spontaneous. You know, you can go into shows with all of what we're going to do. One of the worst things in radio that they do, and if a boss shows it to me, I think I'm in the wrong place, is they'll show you a clock, a paper clock. When I did some shifts at BBC Berkshire and I pulled out in the end because I just couldn't face it, they showed me a clock and it said, right, 2 minutes past the hour, you're going to do the sports. And then at 5 minutes past the hour, you're going to do the weather. At 6 past the hour, you're going to play a jingle. Then you talk up until 8 minutes past the hour, and then you're going to play the first track. And it was all planned like that. And I can't do that. I like my shows to be spontaneous. And if we've got something, but something new comes in that is better and shinier, we can jettison all of that and do that. I'm a big fan of James. Does anyone listen to LBC? No, it's kind of London. It's actually. I'm a big fan of James O'Brien. Well, two people. I love James O'Brien, right? He's a mate, and I think he's a brilliant broadcaster. He's one of the best. And if you want to learn how to kind of do, you know, really intelligent phoning, he's worth listening to at 10 o'clock in the morning. As is Nick Abbott, by the way, on Friday night. He's a genius. But the thing that bugs me about James O'Brien and a lot of these phoning shows, they will do a very straight for the first hour. What was he doing today? For the first hour, we're going to talk about Brexit. And then for the second hour, we're going to talk about why Marks and Spencers isn't doing very well. And then for the third hour, we're going to talk about adoption. And that, to me, is really kind of constricting and constraining, because I like to do it as though you're down the pub with having a conversation. And you don't meet your pubs at 9 o'clock, your friends at 9 o'clock at night in the pub and say, right, well, I thought for the first hour we could talk about Nigel Farage, and then in the second hour we'll talk about, you know, sweets from the 70s. I kind of like it to sort of flow in it, to be a conversation. This is just how I do it, right? It is not, I'm not telling you this is how you should do it, I'm not telling you this is the best way. This is how I like to do it. We mentioned Matt earlier on, and this is another example of why radio for me is the best thing, because you just get these amazing stories, right? You get, and local radio, there is more likely of getting these stories spontaneously. Radio 4, you might hear some of these in like documentaries or stuff, but to get a spontaneous story phoned in like this is incredible. So Matt hated me with a passion, and we found out his favourite song was Daytime Friends, Nighttime Lovers by Kenny Rogers, and we would wind him up by every time he'd start to make a point, he'd start playing that song. Anyway, over time I kind of won him round, because his wife Margaret is in a care home and my mum's in a care home. My mum's very young, she's 65 years old, she's in a care home because she's got really bad MS, and it was my decision to put her in there. It was really painful, horrible decision to make. And so when Matt mentioned Margaret was in a care home, I was able to go, oh, my mum's in a care home. It's horrible, isn't it? It's horrible, it's really upsetting, but it's the best place for them. And he kind of shared, he would share, and we'd share, and other callers would call in over time, not in the same show, but would call in, and, you know, I mentioned she had MS, so one day we were talking about MS, and I was able to identify with that, and talking about families falling apart, and a lot of my family don't talk to me because I made the decision to put my mum in a care home. So I was able to just kind of drop all these little nuggets of information out there, just connected with the listener. And we were doing a phone-in about euthanasia. Oh, yeah, that was it. This is a terrible story, but it was... Well, you have to laugh. Well, you don't have to laugh, but... Well, maybe you won't laugh. There was a guy... It's a horrible story. There was a guy who was doing a Kickstarter fund so that he could go to Switzerland for Dignitas. Just because... Not because he was ill or anything. He just didn't fancy living. So he was doing it on Kickstarter. And he came on the show, and I think he managed to raise £436 before Kickstarter said, we're not having anything to do with this. And they pulled the plug. But it brought up the conversation about euthanasia and dying with dignity and stuff, which is something I'm very passionate about. And Matt called in to tell us that Margaret hadn't been very well recently.
We had a bad time yesterday, and we went, Paul come down from London to see his mum. And then somebody informed me, Dad, you better get over here, because she's had a real bad turn. And she was really bad, and she went grey, completely grey. I thought she was going to die again. We know what's coming, and we wish it would happen sooner than later. And I'm thinking, because tonight you go home with my family girls, and, you know, Dad, when is it all going to end? And I said, well, I wish it would end sooner. You want it to happen, but you're scared when it happens. When you're going through it, and you know yourself, your mum's like, she's disabled, but when you see her, as the guy said before, when you go in there and you see all these people, and they're just existing, it's cool.
It sounds like, and I hope you don't think I'm crossing the line, it sounds like you've accepted there's not long to go. There's not long to go. Do you think that you said you've got your son, have you got daughters as well? Do you think they've accepted that the end is coming?
I just want to say she's in Ireland. She's coming over this weekend. She's already booked up to come over. Oh, damn, so pleased I booked up to see mum this weekend. When you've got to make the decision for your loved one, it's damn hard, Ian. And the guilt hits you like a hammer, you know? You know what I mean?
I do love you, Ian, Matt. I've got tears in my eyes listening to you, because you reminded me of my mum and you reminded me of my dad, and it's a horrible situation to be in, and you're doing exactly the right thing.
Flipping hell, man. I was crying there, genuinely, because my dad had died a few months before. My mum was very ill. Catherine was crying because her mother-in-law had not long passed. It was real. It's the most real thing. You cannot plan that. That call for me is why phoning radio, why local radio to a certain extent, is so important and is so unique and is so powerful. I don't know what to say to the bloke. You know, I'm not a counsellor, I'm not a therapist. So then that's radio at its most pure. It's just two blokes having a chat about how shit life is and how people we love die. Flipping heck. What a privilege. And then it's really weird, because you know, when I was talking to Matt there, and we're having a one-on-one conversation, and you forget that there are people listening. You forget that there are other people out there. And we got loads of nice texts saying, wish Matt well, and all this kind of stuff. But then we got another phone call, and I was not expecting this.
We're going to do the news now. We've got a call I'd rather take instead than you. So let's go to, we spoke to Matt. We can speak to Matt's daughter, Julie. Good morning, Julie.
Hello, Ian.
How are you? You're all right.
I thought your phone call for my dad was absolutely wonderful. and I just want to recommend, you know, just say how thankful I am that, you know, my dad is so, I'm so proud of him.
He's a good boy, isn't he?
He's absolutely amazing, and I think you had that call, that was so brilliant.
How are you, Julie?
Not good.
Of course not.
My son should be under fit. He's by the hall.
How is he? Is your son alright?
He's in the hall.
Right.
And he's still not got up.
Okay, but he's the fit's ended, he's alright.
I'm trying to get him up, but he's not getting up.
Oh, let him lie there for a bit. Here's something. Matt used to hate me. He used to phone up and complain. I know. He used to phone up and complain. And I'm working my magic on him, and I think he's starting to like me.
Magic. I think
he's worked
your magic on him.
Listen, Julie, I lost my dad last year, and this is why I'm crying, because it's reminding me of him a bit. And my mum's not very well either, so I'm all a little bit emotional.
Love you
lot. No, but listen, I know what you're going through, and the end will come.
I'm trying to keep happy.
Yeah, I know.
But it's hard. I was absolutely in tears at that phone call, and I just had to phone you and say how wonderful you handled it.
Well, Julie, you're very kind.
Thank you.
So you and your family
got to know. I made it a little bit. Not sad, but just saying how grateful I am to have my dad and my mum.
Go and tell them both that you love them.
I'll
speak to you again soon, right?
I will, darling.
Take care.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And another thing, man, and it kind of transpired, I've taken that phone call on for a bit longer, that family struggled to say the stuff that Matt was saying to me. He couldn't say to his daughters, and he couldn't say to his son. It was easier for him to phone up some voice. Never met the fella, never met him. You hear what he says in a minute. It was easier for him to phone up someone on the radio and, he's an old Irish guy. He's from a generation that don't share their emotions. But he could do it with someone on the radio. Not necessarily because it was me. It was because it was someone on the radio. During that show, we had created some sort of spell, some sort of magic over the 3 years where people felt that they could phone up and share intimate stuff with me. And then straight after that, we'd go and do something like teasing Justin for believing in magic, you know. And I don't mind those clunky gear changes. I don't mind going from someone dying to, you know, twatting about doing something. I quite like that, because that's what life is like. Again, you know, life goes from, you know, if you've ever been to a funeral, there's an awful lot of laughter. A good funeral, there's a lot of laughter. Not a good one, you know, don't joke. But I've been to funerals where there have been lots of laughter, you know, and that is what life is like. It can be shit, and then you start laughing again. You know, like she's laughing at the end. I'll just play this, and then we'll play something else.
Yeah, okay, lots to talk about this morning, but before that, regular caller, Matt in Luton. Morning, Matt.
Morning, Luton.
Now, I hear you've got some news for us.
Yeah, Matt passed away this morning about, I think, around about 2:00, 2:30. She went very peacefully, and all the girls are there, and Paul, Julie, Helen, Fred are here now, because we weighed, and Nevelson picked her body up, and then we come back to the house on Margaret's home, as I call her. And I said to them, should I ring in this morning? They said, yeah, please ring in, so that we could, you're the one that you're close to me. And we've had our differences, me and you, but you've been very close to me in the last few weeks.
All the kids were with Margaret when she passed.
We were all there.
You were there as well?
Yeah.
Well, isn't that a gift?
Oh, God.
Isn't that a gift?
Yeah, it was absolutely marvellous. And Julie was the last in, and she seemed to wait for Julie to come in.
Yeah. They know something, yeah, they do know.
Yes, I'm sure they do.
And she just slipped away, did she?
Just slipped away, no pain, just relief on her face.
Listen, no death is particularly good, but if you're going to go, then go quietly with all of your family around you. Yeah, that's the whole thing.
We're all singing our favourite songs, which I've told you before.
Which one?
Well, I'll be...
Not Daytime Friends, Nighttime Lovers. That would have been... You weren't singing that way.
From Ejected King, that was her own song.
Well, it sounds like you're a fantastic family, and the fact that they were all able to come together...
To be there.
at this important moment. Matt, do me a favour.
Yeah.
Go back into the room with all your kids.
Yeah.
Give them a big hug and tell them you love them.
Yes, yeah, they know that.
Go and tell them now, because now is an important time for people to remember just how much they love each other, alright?
Yeah, okay.
Matt,
cheers again.
Nice to speak to you. We're all thinking of you and your family.
Thank you.
Lots of love.
Cheers.
Well, should we play a little song for Margaret? I think it would be appropriate, wouldn't it?
From a jack to a king. From a little bit of theatre
at the end, but I mean, I see one or two of you crying. And, you know, which shows how powerful this stuff can be. You're hearing like an edited version of a phone call that went on for a lot longer, and, you know, and a story that was over a couple of weeks, compounded into 5 minutes. That is how powerful radio is, man. That is it. You strip it all away. You strip away all the sound effects and all the noises and all the flashy gimmicks and stuff. It's very best for me. It's two people having a chat. It's two people having a conversation that you're eavesdropping in. Right? That could have been us in the pub. That could have been us at the post office. That could have been me in his living room. Do you know what I mean? When he said you're a mate, I never met the fella. He used to hate me. He used to actively phone up my boss and ask her to fire me. You know, you're a mate. Radio can build up these kind of powerful relationships, and it can create this powerful theatre. It's a bit of theatre, right? It's a little bit of a show, but it's real and it's natural. And you'll get some of that on Radio 4. I'm trying to think of the listening post. That's what I've been trying to think of the last 20 minutes. One of the best shows on Radio 4 is 5 minutes long, and it's called The Listening Post, and they're all online. And it's two people having a conversation, and they go into a booth or into a recording studio anywhere, and they'll chat for about an hour, and they cut it down to like 3 or 4 minutes, right? And it's brilliant. It could be a dad talking to his son about when his son came out 15 years before, or it could be two friends talking about a boyfriend that they fell out of, or it could be a mum talking to a daughter about how upset they all felt when the first daughter died. And it's incredible. It's incredible. And the thing that I really believe, right, the thing that gets me so passionate, and why I've been doing phoning radio for 15 years and I never get bored of it, it's because everyone's got a story. Everyone, all of you, every one of you has got a story to tell. And you might not think you have, because to us, our stories are quite boring. My life, to me, is quite boring. But to other people, they find it quite interesting. You know, you might find your life quite boring, but there will be something in there, something, I guarantee it, that is unique to you, and that other people go, oh, I never knew that. You did that. That happened to you when you were a kid. Your parents did this. You want to do that when you... We've all got these stories, you know, we've all got them, and it's taken me a long time. I would say only in the last 2 or 3 years have I kind of found what we call my voice, our voice, which is the thing that when I'm performing, when I'm doing, I don't do stand-up anymore, but when I do live shows, when I do this, when I do the radio, I now think I sound uniquely like me. For most of my career, I've been ripping off other people or stealing bits from other people and trying to make me sound like a cross between Chris Morris and Danny Baker and Tommy Boyd and Clive Bull and squeeze it all together. Now, at last, in the last 2 years, I think I'm being me, you know, and it takes a long time. One of my favourite radio people, I'll play this last clip in a minute and then we'll take some questions. One of my favourite radio people is a guy called Tommy Boyd, who most of you probably will never heard of. If you go on YouTube, he did some amazing shows in the 90s. Just these. He did this. He kind of did a thing that I have nicked, called The Human Zoo. And what there was nothing like it at the time. On a Sunday night, at 10 o'clock at night, he would go in the studio, turn on the mic, start talking, and when people phoned up, he would just put them through straight to air. When you phone a radio station, you'll speak to the producer, they'll take your name, they'll ask what you want to say, and they may or may not call you back. And The Human Zoo, that just went, and he'd just go, line two, you're on the air. And they might phone up and make a fart noise, and he'd go, line three, you're on the air. And they might sing a song in Spanish, line four, you're on the air. They might come on and call him a racist for something he'd said. You know, it was brilliant. It was just like this really insane theatre, and I thoroughly recommend it. And about 10 years ago, I spoke to Tommy Boyd, and I said, Tommy, I've got to ask, I'm a fan of yours, what do you think of what I do, of the radio stuff that I was doing at LBC at the time? He said, I think you're quite good. You'll be better when you're older. And I saw that as the most patronising. I came away kind of thinking, oh, you smug git. 10 years later, I get it. Because 10 years later, I've got a mortgage, I'm married, I've got two kids, I've got a dead dad, you know, I've got all of these things have happened. And that's not to say you can't do this when you're in your 20s and your 30s. Of course you can, but I just think it's one of those things. I can only get better as I go on. You know, I'm better now than I was when I was 30. I'm going to be even better when I'm 50 and when I'm 60. I think the last clip, right? This is one of my favourite clips, and this is an example. I've not really spoken about the producer and presenter relationship. For me, the producer-presenter relationship is 50-50, right? And sometimes it goes 60-40 in favour of the producer and she's in control. Sometimes it goes, you know, 70-30 in favour of me and I'll kind of wrestle control back. There are some presenters who think that the show is theirs and the producer is there to get them a cup of tea and do as they're told. And there are some producers, when I worked at Five Live for a little while, I hated it. The producers think the presenters are their mouthpieces, right? So they write the script and you have to stick to the script and there is no room to move around in it. I hated working like that. I've got a brilliant producer now, a woman called Catherine, who was with me at Three Counties Radio, and then when I got the boot, I found another job at Talk Radio, where I do a weeknight show now, and I kind of smuggled her over because she was so good. I said to my bosses at Talk, you've got to bring Catherine, she's brilliant and she will help make the show, and she does. And this bit, even though you won't hear her, this is kind of Catherine working her magic, because this goes on for a little bit. And I've had producers who would have typed on the screen or whispered in my ear, let's move on now. We've had enough of this, let's move on now. And Catherine got that I found a gag and I kind of got into a bit of a groove, and she let me go on with it because she was pissing herself laughing, basically. So this is, we're doing a phone-in about... I suggested that if you're 67 and over, you should have to retake your driving test every 2 years, right? Because there was all sorts of stuff about, you know, young people being rubbish drivers and accidents and stuff. I said, no, I don't think it is that. I think older people are more dangerous than younger drivers because their reactions go. They forget the rules of the road. They forget how to do it. So you should have to do a test every 2 years. And if you fail it, you lose your license and that's it. You know, that's how you make the road safer. This guy called Jeff phoned up. And he's old. I can't remember how old he is, but he will tell us. They always tell you how old they are, always, without fail. And I'm asking Jeff one really simple question. Right? The question is, Jeff, do you drive slowly? Do you drive really slowly? Okay, Jeff, do you drive really slowly? Okay? Jeff's not listening to a word I'm saying.
These big cars are pushing you along with their headlights, and some of them put their beams on to try and make you go faster.
I flip it, I hate that. When I'm driving for slightly below the speed limit, yeah. They're beeping me and flashing me. Oh no, sir, that's going to make me go a little bit slower.
People walk across the road, so you've got to make sure that there's no accidents.
Do you drive, Jeff, let's be honest, do you drive?
Yes, I do.
No, hang on, let me finish a second. Do you drive?
Yes.
No, let me finish.
Yeah.
Do you drive?
Yes, and when I go to the village, they push me along to do cargo fast.
Okay, let me finish this. Jeff, do you drive?
Yes, I do.
Jeff, do you drive?
Yes, I do.
No, hang on, I'm going to get there.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yeah.
Do you drive?
Yes,
Jeff, do you drive?
Yes, I do.
There's more coming.
Yeah.
Jeff.
Yeah.
Do you drive?
Yes, I do.
I know you do.
Yes, and I've only had one accident in all my time.
I hope you're all right. But Jeff.
Yeah.
Do you drive?
Yeah.
No, hang on.
So
do you drive?
Yeah.
I know you do.
Yeah.
There's more coming.
Yeah.
Do you drive?
Yeah.
Well, that's great to know, Jeff. Thanks very much.
And that is another, you know, I played a lot of miserable clips and I realised this is a little bit heavy, isn't it? I'm sure people are laughing. But, you know, radio is a friend to the lonely. It is a place for celebration. It's a place for commiseration. The show we're doing now, we're trying to do something a little bit different with the phone-in show that we're doing in the evening. And we're trying to mix all of the elements that you've heard there into a nightly show, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't work, and when you know, and that's all part of the beauty of it for me. And I'm really lucky that I've got a boss that allows me to kind of experiment and play on air. It won't last, it never lasts. They always say less of this, more of that, you're fired. So that will happen at some point. And so that's kind of it. I mean, I don't know if that's any use to anybody. I don't know if it's got you out of like a boring lesson and you come and thought this would be the DOS. Well, unfortunately this is not the DOS. I don't know if anyone's got any questions. And I said you can ask any questions about anything, about this, about TV, about Big Brother, about anything you want at all. I'm open to anything. If you haven't got questions, we'll go home early. Yes, question.
What would you say was your first step in either being published or produced?
Do you mean towards getting my first job?
Yeah, so when you left university, what was the first thing that made you think that, do you know what, I can do this?
I tell you what, it was when I was at university. I went to Middlesex University and did performing arts. In fact, a really good friend of mine there used to go to Bridgewater College. He's now a really good actor. When I was there, this is weird, so we did performing arts, we did like the modules on stand-up comedy, and I did a bit of stand-up for a while, I was never good. We did TV production and radio production and plays and all this stuff. And when we were there, I got really into stage hypnosis. I could do it to all of you now, so watch out. I got really into it, I got really obsessed with it, and I found a friend there and we got really obsessed with it, and we learned how to do it. We put on these little shows. This is when Paul McKenna was like a big stage hypnotist. Now he's like a, you know, he's a guru and a life coach and all that. But he was doing stage hypnotism shows at the Dominion. And we went backstage one night. We waited at the stage door for Paul McKenna, weird kind of groupie thing. And we said, Paul, we've got some brilliant ideas for your show that we think you should incorporate in your show and make your show better. And we told him too. He said, and we had them all, we took books with us. So look, I had those. We told him 2 days, he said, great, can I have those books? We went, whoa, well, why don't we arrange to have a proper meeting? Yeah, exactly, why don't we arrange to have a proper meeting? This was all, you know, ballsy stuff, you know. This is my mate leading.
How old were you?
19, 20. And my mate was leading it, he was 20, Michael Armour, who now is 30. And he said, all right, I'll tell you what, okay, here's my phone number, give me a call, and we'll sort something out. Thinking nothing would come. We phoned him up, he invited us round to his house. We went round to his house and he said, look, here are some more of the ideas that we've got, just for little routines it could do. And he went, these are great. I'm just about to start a TV show. I'd love to get to use these in the TV show. What do you want? And we said, right, we want a credit, we want our names in the credit, we want to be at all the writing meetings. And we won a little bit of money, but the money wasn't that important. We ended up. This was between my first and second year. This was my summer job. Was writing on a TV show for Paul McKenna. And we went to all the meetings. I think we got 250 quid an episode each. And there were 6 episodes. And we went to the recordings of a TV show. And what that kind of taught me was, anyone can do this. It's just having the balls, as a confidence to say, I've got what you need. And kind of giving a little bit and showing, you know, teasing a little bit, but just making demands. And it turns out that if you ask for stuff, you're more likely to get it. There's a lot in this business, there's a lot of kind of dancing around and, well, maybe we'll consider you for this, and, well, we're thinking of you for this. And no one, very rarely do people come out and say, this is what I want, can you give it to me? This new job I've got at Talk Radio, I went in for a meeting, and got before the station started, and the boss Liam said, why do you want to see me? I said, because you need me on your station and I want to do the late night phone-in show. He said, why don't you want to do breakfast or drive? They're the bigger slots. I said, I've got no interest in doing that. I know I would be perfect at doing a late night phone-in show and it would be unique and you won't have anything else like this in the country and we will win in the ratings. And he went for it. And it's only recently, again, I'm learning how to kind of do that. So basically, the thing is, I think all of you can achieve this stuff. I'm so lucky that I made a living out of being on the telly and being on the radio, but I was you. I was sat in a lecture theatre going, oh fuck, this is never going to happen. How's this, you know, with this, I'm never going to get this, and then I got it just because I kept pushing. I'm not necessarily
your age.
Oh god, but you're fucker. I don't think that's a problem. What that means is you've got more experience than everybody else that's
so I can be more ballsy.
Yeah, well, I think you'll be more ballsy. Also, I think you've got more to share. You've all got different skills, right? It's like someone tweeted me a couple of days ago, I want to get into radio, but I'm too old, I'm 40. And I said, no, you're not too old, you've got experience. I talked to Tommy Boyd, and he said, oh, you'll be good when you're a bit older. It's that thing, you've got the experience. You may not have the technical experience, but you can learn that. That you can learn that in a weekend. You can learn how to drive a studio in an afternoon, it's a piece of cake. You know, it's faders and pressing a few buttons. But you've got the experience. And I'm a real, I'm trying to write a book, right? Writing a book is really hard, right? I like reading books, but it turns out there are loads and loads of words in a book. Loads of words. And word count is your enemy. You think, oh, I've got, I'm up to 10,000, 3,200. Oh, Jesus. But I'm going to write a book. I'm going to write a book. Might not get published. It might not be any good. But I'm going to write a book so that I can say, I've tried that. I did a live tour last year, like a 90-minute show, played all loads of theatres around the country. I'd never done it before. And I did it. And it was a really good show. And some nights it sold out, and some nights nobody came, and it didn't matter. But I did it. I made a few quid off it. And I did really enjoy it, and I probably won't do it again. But I did it. And I just think that... It's easy for me to say because I'm kind of that guy now. I'm in that position of privilege and stuff, but I wasn't. I was, you know, I was signing on and was in really bad debt and was going to give it all up. The job that got me my big break was a program called The 11 O'Clock Show. And it was the last audition I was going to go for, the last audition, because I was skinned. I was like $5,000 in debt. I was living at my mum's, left college, I was living at my mum's, and I'd had a chance. Someone had offered me a really good job doing something else that would have been soul destroying but would have paid really well. And it was like, alright, I'm going to do this audition, and then when that fails, I'm going to go and do this job for 3 or 4 years and get some money and see where I am then. And I got that job. I got a job presenting a TV show. You know, that doesn't happen to people like me. It did. Yes, sir.
Who was that one person that inspired you and put that fire inside your belly?
That's a good question, man. That's a really good question. I don't know if there was one person. I tell you who it was, actually. It's an American comedian, a guy called Andy Kaufman, right, who's brilliant, and he wasn't very famous over here. Jim Carrey did a film about him called Man in the Moon. And Andy Kaufman was nuts, right? The silences I learned from Andy Kaufman. Andy Kaufman was this comedian. And quite often he did like a stand-up gig where he'd just stand there for like 5 minutes without saying anything. Imagine standing in a comedy club for 5 minutes without saying anything. And it would be really awkward and uncomfortable. And I would watch videos. I've never seen the guy. He's dead now, unfortunately. But I would watch videos of it. I love it. That tension in the atmosphere that something could go wrong. That's why phony shows, there's always that thing, it could go wrong, go either way. So Andy Kaufman kind of made me realise that you could do stuff that was a little bit different and get away with it. And it could be entertaining. And also, for most of his life, he played to really small audiences. And you always have this dream of, you know, doing a TV show to millions of people. And I've done TV shows that have been to millions of people. And for a while I kind of thought that was the most important thing. If I wasn't playing to, you know, doing a show that was playing to 2.4 million people, then I was failing, right? But then I say this tour I did last year, you know, some venues sold out and we had 250 people. In Swindon, a place that hold 200, we had 30 people turn up, 25 people turn up. It didn't matter. It didn't matter because they were loving it and I was loving it. And I don't know what I'm trying to say. Andy Kaufman is the answer to your question. Is that answer it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Anyone else? Yes, sir.
This might be a rhetorical question, but in your opinion, is there a bit of a difference between mainstream radio such as the BBC and
yeah.
that, and local radio shows like the one you're doing right now?
It's not a rhetorical question. It's an excellent question. Is there a difference between kind of mainstream shows and local shows and small shows? I can tell you the difference between commercial radio and BBC radio. Easier. Commercial radio is driven by figures and by listening figures, because if the listening figures drop, then the advertisers will pull out, or they will offer less money for their advertising. So commercial radio is driven by listening figures, and if you get consistently bad listening figures in commercial, even if you're brilliant, even if it's obvious that you're brilliant, you'll get the sack because you're not making the dollar for the boss. BBC radio is not governed by listening figures at all. They don't care about listening figures at all, because if the listening figures drop, they'll still get the same money from the radio license, the TV license. They'll still get the same amount of cash, so they're not driven. When I was at BBC Three Counties, it took me 9 months. The figures come out every 3 months. It took me 9 months, so 3 sets of figures, before they would tell me what my figures were. because it wasn't important to them, and they couldn't see why it was important. Yet commercial radio, the figures come out on a Thursday, and you get pulled into an office, the whole station, and you have a presentation, and you get shown bar charts and pie graphs and all of these kind of things, and you're not performing. You're doing quite well. You could do better. It's that brutal, you know. And I'm kind of lucky in that I come with a certain amount of privilege when I go to a job, because I've got a reputation. The people that employ me know what I do. So when I get a job, I'm kind of allowed to get away with more than other people would be allowed to get away with, because they kind of expect it for me. I couldn't do harm. Where it's literally, well, that was Robbie Williams and Candy, and this is and don't forget, if you listen to Breakfast, you can win £1 million, and it's literally you're doing those little links. I couldn't do that. That to me is, there's no passion in it, and there's no kind of artistry involved in it. But saying that, you know, I've taken terrible jobs to pay the bills. This is another thing. If you're going to go in this industry, you know, you can have principles and morals, and I'm never going to do this. I walked out of the... I tell you what, here's something, right? This is the biggest mistake I ever made. Biggest mistake I ever made. I will tell you this. The fifth series of the 11 o'clock show, I walked out of a week before it started, because it was a completely new crew. I was the only person, the only presenter, the only member of the crew that was going to be on that show. And a week before it, we did a pilot, we did a test show for it. It was awful. I mean, it was just awful. And I said to my agent, get me off this show. I cannot be associated with this, because I have principles. I was 27 or 28, and I have principles. I also was arrogant and egotist and an idiot. I walked away from £90,000 doing that, and I didn't get a job for a year, because no one wanted to touch me, because who's going to touch someone who's walked away from a show, you know, like that? It was a terrible, terrible thing, and I was an idiot, an absolute idiot, worst decision I ever made. And I've learned since then to do jobs that you hate. If they pay well enough and you retain a certain amount of dignity, i.e. you get to keep your clothes on, I'll do it, you know. And it's true. And I don't really do much TV now, but I get offered stuff, and I kind of check my diary to see if I'm free. I ask how much it is. If it's an alright fee, I'll do it. And I don't really care what it is, you know. I'm doing it as a job. TV for me is a job, radio is a career, if you get the subtle difference. Anything else? Got to go. You go. Get out.
The way my listening, I used to listen to the radio a lot. Part of I'm listening more to podcasts and stuff now.
Right. Yeah.
On demand. Is that where radio's going? Is what's happening on TV?
Yeah, I think so. And we podcast my show every day. We kind of do a best of, and I'm really trying to get them to do a full show, daily podcast. The BBC again is really behind with podcasts. It took me over a year to get them to agree to a weekly best of podcast, because the BBC don't understand it. It's this big kind of lumbering dinosaur, and it's brilliant. I love the BBC, but it's this huge machine that you have to get through layers and layers of management to kind of get an answer. But podcasting is the way. It's certainly helping. It's helping radio stations, because it's raising brand awareness, but it's confusing radio stations, because they don't know how to incorporate the podcast figures into the listening figures. They can't quite get their head around it. The beauty of podcasts, I don't know if any of you do podcasts, but the beauty of it is anybody can do a podcast. Any of you can do it. You can record it, and you can record a podcast on your phone, and you can have it on iTunes in an hour. You know, anyone can do that. The problem with it is hardly anyone's worked out how to monetize it. No one knows how to make money out of it. The successes are Ricky Gervais, but then, you know, he's one of the biggest stars in the world, so he's got to make money out of it. Richard Herring makes money out of his, because he's got a very loyal fan base, and so he will do, like, crowdfunding, and he will also promote live shows in the podcast that then fund the podcast. But I don't see how podcasts are ever going to make money. People have tried, and they've tried subscriptions, and no one wants to pay, because you all want stuff for free. You know, we can all get movies and albums and songs for free now if we want, you know. So yeah, podcasts are changing it. I think they're great in as much as it gives everyone an opportunity to say something, but then there's like a million people all saying something at the same time, and I kind of get lost in the pod. I tend to, with the podcast, go for the people I know, Adam Buxton and Richard Herring, because I know them. I know what I'm going to get. Your podcast might be brilliant. I haven't got a clue who you are, you know. And so my concern is, that the people will kind of get a bit lost in the shouting, but it's a brilliant way to learn.
Well, would it be a good way, because maybe some of the students here,
yeah,
as a way just to practice the craft?
Yeah, oh yeah, I was about to say, it's a brilliant way to learn all of this technical stuff, all of the editing and the uploading and the tagging and all of that stuff. It's a brilliant way of doing it. It's a brilliant way of sharing it. And you might be lucky as well. And you know, your podcast might be the one that just kind of catches the internet wind and sails off. But I mean, when I've been in between jobs, I've done podcasts at home. I've done podcasts under different names, you know, just for a laugh, just for a laugh. And it is, I suppose it's the same of, we look of a similar age. Right, but I would make tapes for my mates, you know. And I would make mixtapes. I make some record little bits of comedy in between the songs. It's the modern equivalent of that. It is a brilliant opportunity that you've got a laptop or a phone and you can record a podcast, and it can be anything, and you can send it out to the world. Yeah, it's brilliant. If people want to get in this industry, they should be doing it, I think. Yeah.
How often did like backstage politics get in the way of like your radio show? Because I did one. Like secondary school, and then I moved to the internet because backstage politics kind of got in the way.
Backstage politics. Yeah, at the BBC a lot more than they're in commercial. In commercial, you know, I have been hired. Every job I've had, I've been hired because they know what they're going to get from me. And every now and then, you'll get a little nudging. A little nudging. I've not had any yet at all. It will come, but you get a little bit. Oh, that went a bit far last night. Don't do it again. Okay, I won't do it again. You know, but the BBC. I love the BBC, but it's so messed up, man. It really is. It's a confusing mess, and it's no one knows who's in charge. So yeah, the BBC, the politics would get in the way a lot, and we had a boss who would say, "This isn't coming from me. This is coming from my boss. But can you do less of this? And can you?" And you think, well, you're my boss, you know. So yeah, it did get. How did it impact on you?
They wouldn't let us talk about certain topics, so we moved to the internet since we were our own bosses then.
And you're still doing it on the internet?
Yeah.
And are you on YouTube, did you say? And how's that going? Are people finding you?
Much better, yeah.
And you're enjoying it?
Yeah.
And again, it's going back to what you're saying. That's the thing as well. You know, it isn't necessarily about audiences and about getting money. It's about having fun. It's about enjoying it. It's about creating something artistically. It's an art. You know, making podcasts, doing YouTube videos, doing the radio. It can be, you know, I don't want to sound pretentious, but it can be art, man. You know, you are creating something that didn't exist before. Yes?
So you jokingly said we're about the same age and you're talking about communities and building that.
Yeah.
Do you feel like the community that you build and what you talk about is governed by your own demographic?
Are the audience that are listening to me kind of a similar age to me?
Yeah.
No, not at all. And this is the beauty of it. This is the beauty of it. Beauty of what I do anyway is that we have we've got a 10-year-old kid that phones us up, and we've got Dennis, who's 92 next month if he makes it. I've got a bet with Dennis he won't make it. He keeps phoning up. He says, "Oh, I hope you've got that tenner ready. I hope you've got that 20 quid ready." I said, "Dennis, look, I don't want to be awkward, but when I come to the funeral, who do I ask for the money?" And he gets it. So no, it doesn't. And also, and another thing I'm really pleased with. Is we have a lot of, I have a lot of women phoning us up. A lot of phoning radio seems to be dominated by male presenters, definitely, and that's something that needs to be, that your generation needs to change. My generation got it wrong again. I thought my generation would solve the, you know, kind of the ethnic minorities and the gender and all, and we didn't. It's still white, middle-aged, heterosexual men that are running the show. So hopefully you lot can get that right. But we get a lot of, I get a lot of women phoning up. I get a lot of girls and I get a lot of old women, and so no. And that's another thing that a lot of bosses at radio will have. They will have an image of who the target audience is. And BBC local radio, the image was a woman called Susan who was 53 years old and she had two kids at university. And it was that specific. And I don't believe that. I don't buy that. If radio's good, then people will listen. I love the fact that we've got kids phoning up and we've got old people and we've got everybody in between. So I don't know why that is with me. I don't know why I'm appealing to all different kinds of groups, but that seems to be the way it works for me. Yes? I always wanted to be an actor as a kid. When I was a little kid, I wanted to be an actor. And that's why I went to study performing arts, because the plan was to be an actor. And I couldn't get any acting work, because I'm not a very good actor. I did do one sitcom a few years ago. It was terrible. Turns out I can't act. So when I left college, I did stand-up comedy, because we'd had a module on stand-up comedy, and I couldn't get acting work. It was just a way, kind of similar to the podcasting, it was a way of just performing, you know, 10 minutes a night, you know, do it two or three nights a week. And it, for me, that was kind of just me finding out who I am, finding my voice, and putting something out there, being artistic and being creative. And it was, you know, it was just by luck that I got the TV break that made it. And then by luck again, that I got the radio, and it turned out I was all right at radio, and I got radio just as the TV work was drying up, and it was, you know, it saved my life, because God knows what I'd be doing if that hadn't have come along.
One last question.
If we have any other questions, can we phone your radio show?
Wow! Yeah, listen, you're all invited.
How can we find your show?
Here's the thing, yeah, you're all invited to phone the radio show. The radio show is on Talk Radio. It's only on DAB. You can get an app on your phones, or you can go to talkradio.co.uk. If you look for me in iTunes, type in Ian Lee and Talk, and you'll get the podcast. You can phone in about anything you want. And also, if you go to my website, ianlee.com, my email address is up there. ian@ianlee.com. You can send me an email. I will get back to you. It might take a while, because I'm so rubbish at emails. I just takes me ages. But yeah, you can email me any questions that you want, and I will fill them in. That was your last question, guys. I'm sorry. Hey, listen, thank you so much.
We're going to leave this room now.
Right,
so.
Get out, everybody. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you for doing that. Yeah. And a good turnout as well.
Oh yeah, of course I'm.
Here we go. I walk up with your fancy.
Brilliant, thank you.
We're streaming live to America.
Oh, you're streaming live to America.
Yay!
Bye, Periscopers. Ta-ta. Oh.